Blog Talk Radio.
Promotes health awareness through our weekly discussion. Healthy 365 does not provide medical advice. Please consult your health provider for all your medical concerns and needs. Welcome, friends, to tonight's edition of Healthy 365. I'm your host, Nicole Lee, coming to you live from Tennessee Valley, which is Huntsville, the Huntsville area. Tonight, it's a little bit chillier for my area. I know some of the Midwest and other areas have some snow, so I hope everyone stays warm. And I want to thank you so much for tuning in tonight and starting your week off with me. Tonight, we're going to be discussing a topic that's near and dear to my heart. As many of you know, I am a licensed practical nurse. I'm currently working on my RN. My long-term goal is to be a nurse practitioner. And one of the areas that I'm deeply considering specializing in would be palliative and hospice care. And so tonight we'll be discussing those different types of care. And again, that's palliative and hospice care and why this is necessary in our medical community and how these forms of care can be supportive to you or to your loved ones. I want to also take a moment to thank all of our veterans. Yesterday was the formal holiday, Veterans Day. So thank you to all of those that I know that have served, including my Auntie Linda, and also my Uncle Charles and my stepfather, who have both passed on. But thank you so much for your contributions and for keeping us safe. We're in deep gratitude to all of you for your service. And I want to send out a special shout out to a beautiful young lady. Actually held this little girl when she was first brought home from the hospital. And so I know her mother is very proud of her in heaven. I hope she rests in peace. But to the Dillard family, congratulations, Megan Dillard. She just graduated Friday. She just graduated from cadet school. And so she is now officially a member of our U.S. Navy. So congratulations, Megan, and thank you for your courage and for your service to our nation. So we're very, very proud of you, the young lady that you've become. And I know you're going to do great things in the future. So we're very, very proud of you. So let's kind of get into it. I want to start with palliative care. Palliative care provides care for those with a serious or chronic illness, and from the time of diagnosis throughout the course of treatment, it's a care that optimizes quality of life, and what it does is it anticipates, prevents, and manages suffering. It is delivered by an interdisciplinary team, so that's a group of physicians, a group of nurses, a group of social workers. There's also chaplains and other practitioners, and also volunteers, okay? So we couldn't do all of that wonderful care without volunteers. And this is to address the physical, intellectual, and emotional, social, and spiritual needs of patients and their families. So when you think about palliative care, I know that there are a lot of myths, mainly about hospice, not really about palliative care. I think there's not enough knowledge and awareness about palliative care. So basically, if someone has a chronic illness that they're suffering from, they can opt for palliative care to kind of treat that condition and kind of keep those symptoms managed. So their suffering is the minimal. So basically it would be a chronic condition that, such as diabetes or dementia is one that comes to mind, or Alzheimer's. So basically, palliative care and hospice care kind of go hand in hand. Palliative care, like I said, it's more for the symptoms and management. Hospice is more end-of-life care. So I always encourage patients and their families, if there's one available to you, a palliative care service, and your loved one suffers from multiple chronic illnesses, such as a good one would be like lupus is a really good one that causes multiple complications. Forms of cancer would be a really good one. I mentioned dementia. Lots of different conditions have different stages. So anything that has developed into end stage or a more severe stage. So if someone has a form of heart failure and it's more severe and it's dwindling on the form of end stage and they're having a lot of complications from it, this would be awesome because it's going to manage their suffering and their conditions. Oh, another good one is COPD. That's a big one that I see quite a bit, which is a condition of the lungs. And there's no cure for it. It's irreversible, the damage. And so you'll get a team of professionals that come on board to kind of manage those symptoms so that they can focus on other things. Because, like you know, as humans, we are very complex and we are all unique. And so someone's, say, lupus may be causing them a lot of pain and discomfort and other complications, but they also may have high cholesterol, diabetes, and some other chronic conditions as well. And so their doctors, their primary practitioners or providers can continue to manage those other conditions, but they can have a palliative care team and there'll be a doctor that kind of heads that team that kind of manages lupus to kind of keep it well managed. What does palliative care do? Okay. So some of the things that it does is it provides relief from pain and other distressing symptoms. It also enhances quality of life, and it may also positively influence the course of the illness. So through the interventions of the care team, okay, you can positively improve management of the illness, like I gave the example of lupus. It also integrates the psychological and spiritual aspects of patient care. And again, this reflects back to the social worker that will be on board and the chaplains. And the chaplains can be from any faith, it's a community effort. And so you can also have a part of that team, like a psychologist or a psychiatrist even can be a part of that interdisciplinary team. It uses the interdisciplinary team approach to address all the needs of the patients and their families. So this is big. Many people think that hospice and palliative care is just for the patient, but it's not. It is for their loved ones, their partner, their significant other. It's for the family. It's for their friends. Everyone that's involved in this patient's life, their community of support, their network of support, it can provide support to family. So that means if you're having trouble with your loved one's decisions about their care, and we'll talk a little bit too about advanced directives and things like that, it will give you also access to a chaplain, someone that can sit with you. And if you're kind of grappling with your beliefs and kind of trying to come to terms with it, you know, remember, I know we talked about grief before, and there's different stages of grief, can kind of help you kind of go through those stages and have someone to talk to. It can also give you some examples of what to expect, you know, like, okay, this is what's happening, you know, this is their prognosis. Prognosis means, you know, as far as their condition, their expectancy, kind of where they are in their condition and everything. So it can kind of help you kind of really gain understanding, but acceptance. But another thing that it can do for families, a lot of times the biggest barrier that we find is sometimes we can put our emotions and our needs ahead of the patient and what they need. Yes, we may want our mother or father or loved one to fight. We may want them to, continue aggressive treatment. We may want them to continue things like chemotherapy and radiation and other things. But at the end of the day, it's about that patient. So it's really important to have multiple layers of support and care teams for the patient to make sure that their needs and their wishes are being honored is the main thing, so that they have a safe place to stay. I'm tired, you know, I don't want to do this anymore, or I'm really in a lot of pain, and I've been seeing my primary care provider, and it's just not working well, you know, and so they can get a team on board that they understand this person with this condition, they're in pain. So it's not that they're seeking out pain medication or they're, you know, making more out of it than it is. This is what we have found. This person, we don't want them to suffer. This is what we need. You know, in conjunction maybe with things like pain medication, we can also have them do some exercising or some meditation or some other things to kind of manage that. So that is so important. Like I said, the biggest things for families is just to make sure that you take a time out and kind of self-reflect at times, just to make sure that you're not imposing your will or your wishes onto the patient. So, you know, look at them. Like, you know, for example, I see this a lot with those with kidney disease, where a lot of times the person, they absolutely do not want interventions like dialysis. And this person will go through these treatments for several hours, multiple times a week when they're doing the in-center hemodialysis. And they don't want this treatment. They're miserable. You can just tell. They're not eating. They're not really moving. They're not really talking. They have no quality of life. And the loved one is just, you know, oh, you know, we can't get, you know, dad to eat. We can't get him to come out of bed. He cries. He doesn't want to do it. And they're like, you're getting up and you're going to do it. Well, is that really fair to him? If he's showing all of the signs that he's tired, who is being the voice for dad? Who is listening to him? Yes, we don't want to lose our loved ones, but at some point you have to ask, is this really a good quality of life? Let me think. I know my dad, or I know my mom, or my loved one, and is this really what they want and really how they would want to spend their last time? I think so often we fear the unknown, and so end-of-life care can be so difficult to talk about because we fear what we don't know. We don't know. I think there's a song that says, oh yeah, it's one of my favorites. It's Sam Cooke, and it's what is it? Oh gosh, I'm thinking of the I'll think of it in a minute. Oh, he said something about, because I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. And then the next part, it's been a long time coming, but I know a change is going to come. I always think it just, to me, it just really captures the essence of, you know, just with those words, that we don't know what's on the other side. We don't know about death. We know about that from many things, from a personal experience, until it happens. You know, you don't know. I've had patients and people share kind of leading up to them leaving, and you see different, but you don't actually know. So sometimes it's, we fear the unknown, but the great thing about it, you know, and I'm a very spiritual person, is I know that the Creator does not want us to suffer. And so I know in my feeling, in my heart, in my core of my beliefs, I know that you are given peace, and you just have this sense of it's okay. You know, I remember, and this was with my grandma, and I'm going to try not to cry. We lost her a few years ago, and I didn't know that much about hospice. I was a newer nurse, and I remember with the integrity of who I am at my core for medicine and for nursing, I don't like to see the people that I love and care about. I can do it for the people that I care for in my professional life, but for those that are close to me, I don't want to see them suffer. And so I'm definitely an advocate for palliative and hospice care and the beauty of it and the the level of support and how it just prevents lack of understanding, in my opinion, especially when you can get them on board immediately, you know, as soon as possible, to really help there not to be misunderstandings that, you know, people grapple with grief. So we kind of handle those, you know, so differently. It's so personal. And I just remember seeing her laying there, and I remember her holding on, and I know she was holding on because that's what mothers do. I mean, my grandmother was an amazing woman. She had 12 kids, and I know for the ones that were left here, and I think about the fact that she did have to bury some of her children and how horrible that must have been, but I just remember her laying there and her suffering. I won't go into too much detail because it's private, but I remember looking at her, and she was so strong and she's so beautiful, and her face, it was just like a beautiful, she's just like the pivotal of strength. And I see her sitting there with her two braids, her long, beautiful, silky hair. And I remember kissing her on the forehead and whispering to her, "I love you so much, and it's okay. You can go. And I'm not going to be here because I have to work, but I love you and we all love you, and you don't have to wait and you don't have to hurt and you don't have to hold on anymore. It's okay to go." And she looked at me as if, really? You know? And so that's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about this level of care, is because it is okay. You know, I know for me and my personal choices, I don't want to suffer. You know, if I don't want to be in pain, I want to die with integrity. I'm, you know, I have all my wishes and everything kind of situated and designated, and I know who I can entrust with those decisions, and we'll talk about advanced directives during this hour together. But that stuck with me, and it ended up leading a lot of things with medicine. It kind of found me. You know, I didn't go out thinking I wanted to do anything in medicine. I couldn't have been the opposite of someone going into the medical field. I was afraid of everything, bodily fluids, everything. But just the level of wanting to make a difference. And so she, my grandmother, she passed away within a few days of that. But she was holding out. She was really holding out for her kids. So I can't impress upon people enough, you know, to just make sure you're putting the person first, and, you know, don't tell them things they want to hear. Don't put your desires on them. Don't make it about you. There's nothing that breaks my heart worse than I see someone, I'm looking at them, I know that they're ready, and someone is just freaking out every time, you know, they want to, oh, you know, no, I can't, oh, mama, mama, mama. You know, it's just, you need support so that you can be there for the patient. And I'm not saying that you don't have a right to grieve. It hurts. It hurts like hell. I can't tell somebody how to grieve or how to handle the loss of someone, but at the same token, at that moment, it's about the patient, you know? So I think getting the support through social workers, through medical professionals, it will give you the tools to put the person first, to really look objectively through the situation and say, you know, they're hurting, they're ready to go. And a very common phenomenon with people that are dying, you will hear so many people say, he died or she died when I left the room. I was just going to get something to sleep, or I was just going to get a cup of coffee, and then when I came back, he died. And then they have all this guilt. A lot of times they do it because they know you can't handle it. They know that that's their gift to you. They don't want you to see that. They know. And I just find that so remarkable, that even knocking on death's door, even as we're waiting to transition, just the heart of just the beauty of love, you know, the beauty of really loving and being devoted to somebody, is that even in your last moments in life, you don't want to hurt them. You are still looking out for them. You're still, it's the natural human nature to put the needs or the love or the the well-being of someone important to them over their own means. And I just find such beauty in that. And that's why I'm just so passionate about end-of-life care. Where we left off with what does it do, palliative care? It also uses the interdisciplinary team. We talked about that. It offers a support system to help patients live as actively as possible throughout the course of an illness. It offers a support system to help loved ones cope with stress, and that is normal, everyone. It is not easy to be a caregiver. It is not easy to support someone close to you who has a chronic condition or who has a terminal condition during the patient's illness and in their own bereavement, okay? So they're there for you too, okay? Even if you're not ready, even if it's been months or weeks after your loved one has passed on or whatever, they are still available to you. That's what a lot of people don't realize. It's applicable early in the course of illness, it says, and it's used in conjunction with other therapies that are intended to cure an illness or prolong life. And these types of therapies they're talking about are chemotherapy, radiation, surgical procedures. And one of the most important things it does is it affirms life and regards dying as a normal process. Okay, so dying is not taboo, everybody. It is a normal part of life. Or for those of you Disney fans that like The Lion King, it's the circle of life, okay? Who needs palliative care? These were some interesting facts here. It says any one of the millions of people suffering from a chronic illness could benefit from ongoing palliative care to enhance their quality of life. It has here some statistics that about half of all Americans live with at least one chronic illness, and that number is projected to increase by more than 1% per year by the year 2030. 60% of patients are between the ages of 18 to 64. And it gives some astounding information about one of our largest states in the United States. It may be the largest. California alone, it says, has 14 million residents of all ages that live with at least one chronic condition. And this represents 38% of the state's population, and more than half of this group is living with multiple chronic conditions. And some of the typical chronic diseases they talked about were chronic pain, hypertension, arthritis, diabetes, and heart disease. It says these chronic conditions increase in severity, frequency, and complexity with age, and 9 in 10 Americans over the age of 65 suffer from at least one chronic disease, with 77% contending with two or more. And this is very much, I see it all the time, multiple conditions. Who needs palliative care? Who provides palliative care? My goodness. Palliative care is provided by an interdisciplinary team, my goodness. It's comprised of physicians, nurses, social workers, and spiritual counselors, as well as pharmacists and other health professionals, and again, volunteers, according to the needs of the patient and family. And it has here that over the last 6 years, the number of hospitals with palliative care teams countrywide has doubled to more than 1,500. However, access to palliative care is still limited, and this breaks my heart. But I'm going to include some resources and my blog that gives you information on where to go to locate hospice and palliative providers. I actually worked for a hospice provider for nearly 3 years, and I fell in love with hospice after my personal experience. I kind of wanted to dig in and learn more, and I worked in an area called telehealth where I was one of the active after-hours nurses. I worked overnight, and I would be available to families and sometimes patients directly that had emergencies or needs overnight. So you had 24-hour care, and there were nurses that were on call and were dispatched, or there was a triage nurse that helped and get things like refills on medicines or new into triage nurse. So it was really a wonderful experience, and I really impacted the lives of many patients and many families. And many times I would be the person that would get the call, and you kind of get to know the people, even though it's over the phone, over time. when they cry and they say, you know, dad is gone, or I just want to thank you, you know, Nicole, for being there, for listening. It was funny. Sometimes I would actually have people say, I just only want to talk to Nicole. Is she there this evening? Because I was like always there, working all these different hours and stuff. But yeah, so it just, you know, you get to be really acquainted with the end of life process and things, and it, like I said, it's beauty, and it to me, and it's definitely necessary, and I don't think we talk about it enough. It says that they have like a link, and I'm going to include it in my blog for where you can go. There is a Center to Advance Palliative Care. There's also a directory of palliative care providers based on the American Hospital Association and the National Palliative Care Registry. Okay, so the other form of care is end-of-life care, and that's what I focused on. The company that I used to work for, I'm not going to name their names, they did provide palliative care in a limited demographic, and I know it was on the East Coast. I believe we did it in Connecticut. And I'm trying to think. I can't think of the other state right now. I don't think it was Maine, but I definitely know we did palliative care in Connecticut, and I can't think of the other state that we did it in. But we did do hospice care, which is end-of-life care. And so basically hospice care is focusing on caring, not curing. And it provides care. For the most part, it's in the patient's home. But there also are some wonderful inpatient units as well. Usually those are utilized for respite care. But basically hospice is compassionate care for people facing a life-limiting illness or injury for someone with a life expectancy of 6 months or less to live, okay? Hospice care involves a team-oriented approach to expert medical care, pain management, emotional and spiritual support, expressly tailored to the patient's needs and wishes. It's support provided to the patient's loved ones as well. And the whole principle behind it is that everyone has the right to die pain-free and with dignity, and that families deserve support to allow the care team to do so. So we have quite a bit more content. I want to talk about some myths about hospice. I also want to give honor and acknowledgement to our sponsors. So, you know, all of this is possible by Digital Guard. And don't forget to check out our channel on YouTube. It's at www.digitalguardtv.com. There's some great promotionals and some videos on there as well by one of the hosts on this network. And let me get into our quick ad from our sponsor, and I will be back in a minute. Did you know that most burglaries occur between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m.? Home alarm systems don't prevent burglaries. Alarm companies call the police after a break-in occurs. Be proactive. Get a Digital Guard wireless HD home camera system with monitoring. We offer two convenient purchasing options. You can purchase your very own system today for as low as $684.63. Or lease a system with no credit check for just $275 down and 14 monthly payments of $50. So don't wait. Call Digital Guard today at 888-640-577, option 2. And don't forget to mention the promo code Nicole. That number again is 888-640-577, option 2. Because what you can't see will hurt you. Thank you so much for joining this evening. I'm your host, Nicole Lee, and this is Healthy 365. Today is November 12th, and we're talking about palliative and hospice care. And we did wrap up our topic about palliative care, which is support for chronic conditions, and hospice care. We're just now starting to talk about that. That is end-of-life care. And so we kind of gave the definition of hospice care. Hospice care has a lot of myths. In my time in telehealth with hospice, I would hear quite a bit from things like, oh, I didn't want my mom on hospice care because they killed my sister. No, hospice doesn't kill anybody. So there's just like a lot of myths out there. So here's some common myths. Hospice care is only for cancer patients. I'd never heard of this myth before. But the truth is that hospice care is for all patients with a terminal illness with a prognosis of 6 months or less, including but not limited to things like Alzheimer's, cardiac disease, ALS, stroke, or liver disease. Here's another myth. Hospice is just for the elderly. The truth is, hospice is for all age groups during their final stages of life, including children and adults of all age groups. Hospice is just for the patient, and this is one we've just talked about. Meeting the needs of the patient and family is the top priority of hospice, but the family unit is at the center of all decision-making. Okay, so they also meet the unique needs of the patient and the caregivers. Another myth, the patient cannot keep their own doctor. So if you really, really love Dr. Smith and they've been your primary care provider for 20 billion years, you can keep your doctor. Hospice care may be provided where the patient and family may choose to keep their own doctor or may choose our medical director. So you can choose the medical director of like your hospice provider, but you can keep your doctor and they can still oversee your care. Hospice care may only be provided in the patient's home. That is not true. Although many people, it is their express wish to have care in their home. I mean, think about it. Our home, they call it our castle. It's everything. It's what we know. It's where we have memories. It's where we're most comfortable. So a lot of care is provided in the patient's home, which is great because it's about meeting the needs of the patients. And that's what many people want to be home. They don't want to be in a hospital among strangers. They don't want to be alone. That's a big fear with people is dying alone. And that's the beauty of hospice is the goal is for someone to be there with you so you're not alone. It's really beautiful, especially when someone doesn't have a lot of family and the hospice nurse or hospice aide can be there and hold that person's hand and kind of be the last face that they see. I'm going to start crying. One of my favorite shows is on NBC. It's called All of Us. And this one character his name is Randall, and he was adopted, and he found his birth father, who was a drug addict. His birth mother had passed away, as well as his paternal grandmother, so his birth father's mother had passed away as well. And he got to know his dad, and his dad was actually terminal. He was sick, and they took a trip. Because the dad felt it was important for him to know where he was from. And Randall had been adopted by a Caucasian family. And so he really spent his whole life trying to find who he was. And part of that was knowing who he was as a man, but also as a Black man. And so finding his dad really helped him. And the story is just, if anybody, and I mean, if you really want to see like good writing and good TV, I really do love All of Us. It is a wonderful show. It comes on Tuesdays at 8 o'clock Central Standard Time. So that is 9 o'clock Eastern Time. And it's an hour long program. And this is the second season. And all of the episodes are available on demand. It is just such a beautifully written story, not to mention Randall, the guy that plays Randall, he's really hot and he's in that, he's like a man. I like men. He's a manly man. He's in that new movie Marshall with, why can't I think of that girl's name right now? The actress, it's Goldie Hawn's daughter. I can't think of her name right now, but he's in the movie with her, based on, Thurgood Marshall. And then, the guy, I can't think of his name right now, the actor that plays the dad, the adopted dad, amazing, as well as the birth father that passed away. But anyway, they take a trip, and his dad was born and raised in Memphis, and he tells him about all the things, like living through like the civil rights movement and discrimination, and, you know, and his dad was talented. He was a poet, and he was into music. And you just think about it as an adoptive child, and the dad, it was so complex because, of course, grief and death is because here's this young man who just found his father and already, once again, he's losing. First of all, he lost his adoptive dad. We don't know how yet, but he lost his adoptive dad. But then he's losing his father that he just found, this connection. He just found this wonderful family, found out about where his father is coming from and finding about his birth mother and hearing all these stories and just feeling like, oh gosh, you know, it wasn't that they didn't want me, it's that they wanted me to have better for me because they were both on drugs. And it's not that he was an illiterate drug addict. I mean, he served in the military and he was smart. He just made the wrong choices, and through his grief, he started using and da 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 da. So the dad is laying there and he got really sick, and the son immediately, like a lot of people, it was so awesome. He wanted him to get back to his state so he could help, you know, because he, you know, people want to fix it. That's their nature. We just want to fix things. And the dad looked at him and he said, I don't want to die alone. I have so many things I'm ashamed of. And his son told him that he was a great person and he was a great dad and that he wasn't alone. And he held his dad's hand and his dad looked him in the eye and he said, it's okay, you can go. And his dad smiled and he looked up and he left. And I mean, that, people, that really is how it is a lot of times. I mean, it really is. People, they don't want to be alone. So that's like the greatest gift that you can have, that they can have, is that they're not alone. Another myth is that hospice care is expensive. Hospice care is actually a benefit under Medicare Part A. Medicare Part A is your hospital benefits, so that's your inpatient benefits. B is your doctor's office visits, okay? And then you have C, D, and all those other ones. It also is covered by commercial insurance as well as Medicaid as well. So, and there are some hospice providers that will provide the service regardless of a patient's ability to pay. Okay. Now, another really great resource, and you can get this through AARP. Okay. And I think you have to be 55 and older to join AARP. And I think like a membership I'm looking here is like $16 a year, but they have some wonderful resources about like 10 facts about hospice care. Let me check my time. Yep, we're doing great. Okay, so signing up for hospice, here's a fact, doesn't mean you're giving up all medical care. So here's the fact. Transitioning to hospice means shifting from one set of goals, which is how to get longer life through a cure, to another, how to get the best quality of life out of whatever time is left. Many people will say things like, I don't want to give up. But the key is to understand what they think they're giving up. Even when a cure is no longer viable, therapies that improve symptoms and raise comfort can continue. This particular provider says that they deliver very aggressive care for people that are on hospice. It says, if you feel that you have not exhausted all of your treatment options in search of a cure, hospice may not be for you. Medicare hospice rules require foregoing curative treatment. So it's important to know there's a difference between treatments for comfort, okay, and treatments to cure, okay? You have to qualify for hospice, but you can opt out at any time. Okay, so here's another fact. To qualify for hospice benefits, either through Medicare or private insurance, two doctors must certify that you have a life-altering condition with an expected prognosis of 6 months or less, okay? The time frame is arbitrary. However, there's no biological or scientific basis for knowing how long you have left, okay? So nobody really knows, but in their medical professional opinion, you know, the prognosis is 6 months or less. If you start hospice and realize it's not for you, you can quit, okay? You can try hospice, you know? Think of it as like a safety net, you know, like services or support that you have a right to. So it's okay to initiate it and then say, yeah, I'm doing better, it's not for me. And people get discharged from hospice all the time, because they do better, which is wonderful. You may live longer during the time you have left. Many hospice recipients live longer because their pain is being managed. All their needs are being managed. They're managing that condition, so they live longer. The goal of pain management in hospice is to enable you to live well, not to sedate you. And it says here, a common misconception is that people think pain medicine will make the person sleepy to the point where they can't interact. But a nurse that has been a hospice nurse for 20 years, and she's also an author of Living at the End of Life, it's quite the contrary. You can live with, why live with pain unnecessarily? if it makes you more tired and irritable and robs you of quality of life. Drugs like morphine are used to help treat anxiety and lessen your pain, which is shown to be undertreated at the end of life, not hasten death, as many people believe. So people, morphine does not kill you. Okay, it is not, nobody's over-medicating you. We're not secret Kevorkians and we're secretly working to take you out. It's to keep you comfortable and to manage your pain and your suffering. Hospice can enrich and sometimes salvage the last stage of life. It says almost a third of those with a terminal illness die in the hospital, hooked up to machines that do little to halt the process of dying. Hospice is designed to support the more personal aspects of this life stage, reflecting on achieving a sense of closure and realizing any end-of-life goals, such as attending a grandchild's graduation or getting financial affairs in order. Okay? And there's some other really great facts on there as well. I also want to talk about advanced directives, okay? So an advanced directive is a document when a person makes a provision for healthcare decisions in the event that in the future the person becomes unable to make those decisions. So there are two types of advanced directives, okay? And this is so important for everyone. This is important for someone, regardless of your state of health. Every adult should have an advance directive, okay? I cannot stress this enough. So basically, if you are incapable of expressing your wishes, okay, this document will state what you want, okay? So there's two different types. There's a living will, which is the oldest type of healthcare advance directive, and this is a signed witness document called a declaration or directive. And just like it sounds, it's going to direct the medical professionals. Most declarations instruct an attending physician to withhold or withdraw medical interventions from its signer. So from the person, okay, from the patient, if the person is in a, has a terminal condition or if they're unable to make decisions about their medical treatment. So it's going to say, yes, I want you to put me on life support. Yes, I want you to do everything to sustain my life. Yes, I want you to do this. Or no, if I'm brain dead or I'm not breathing on my own, I don't want you to hook me up to a machine. I don't want a machine breathing for me. I don't want you to resuscitate me. These are important, okay? Family members and others who are familiar with the signer's values and wishes have no legal standing to interpret the meaning of a directive. So this way, there's no fighting or arguing or misconception of dad wanted this, no, dad wanted that. And there's no misconception where we're starting to put, again, our will and our wants on a patient. This will be a living will is a document that an adult can put in place that tells their wishes. And you don't have to. If you're not comfortable, you don't have to discuss this with anyone if you don't want to. Just make sure your provider, so your primary care provider, has a copy of this document, okay? And I'm going to include some links on some places you can go to get free forms so you can make it. Another one is a durable power of attorney for healthcare. And this is basically a witness or notarized document in which the signer designates an agent. So this is someone who you're going to have speak for you. You're going to tell this person, this is what I want. This is what I don't want. Okay. This is what I do want. You're going to designate somebody. So unlike living wills, the durable power of attorney for healthcare does not require that the signer have a terminal condition. So you can do this with a spouse. You can do this with another family member. You can do this with somebody you trust or your bestie. You can designate someone to make decisions for you when you're incapacitated. Okay. They also have combination advanced directives and all these other wonderful things. Let me play a clip for you. It's something called Understanding Hospice, and it comes from the Organization for Hospice Care. I'll play a clip so it gives you like more understanding about what hospice is.
Many people have heard the term hospice, but most don't really understand what it means. Yes. Hospice provides care for people with a terminal illness, but hospice isn't only about dying. Hospice is about living as fully as possible for as long as possible with a team of compassionate people focused on alleviating suffering and pain. Hospice care brings comfort, dignity, and peace to help people with a life-limiting illness and provide support for their family and friends who love and care for them.
You know, the research shows that some patients actually improve when they enter hospice. It's because of the intensity of the care and because people have stopped some of the treatments that often make them feel a lot more ill than they had been feeling.
Here are 10 things about hospice you should know if you or a loved one is facing a serious illness. Hospice is not a place. It is high-quality medical care focused on comfort and quality of life. Hospice is paid for by Medicare, Medicaid, and most insurance plans, and usually doesn't cost the patient anything. Hospice serves anyone with a life-limiting illness, regardless of age, type of illness, who you are, or where you live. Hospice serves people of all backgrounds and traditions. The core values of hospice, allowing the patient to be with family, including spiritual and emotional support, treating pain, these cut across all cultures. Research has shown the majority of Americans would prefer to be at home at the end of their lives. Hospice makes this possible for most people. Hospice also serves people living in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And hospice patients and families can receive care for 6 months or longer. A person can keep his or her referring physician while getting hospice care. Hospice offers grief and bereavement counseling to the family and to the larger community. To get the most out of what hospice can offer, it's better to have care for more than just a few days.
You know, you actually don't have to be imminently dying to receive hospice services. It's a benefit that we designed to care for people during the last 6 months of their lives. A person can remain in hospice services with certification from your doctor that you are still, in fact, terminally ill.
The best time to learn more about these hospice facts is before someone in your family is facing a healthcare crisis.
Okay, that was a clip from something called Understanding Hospice, and I will include some links to the wonderful organization for hospice care. It's an organization called the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, and they have some wonderful, they have a website, but then they also have some great videos that you can actually see if you like to look at their faces, some great clips for caregivers and about hospice and end-of-life care and all these wonderful things. It's not taboo, it's just a part of life. So my goal here is to empower people with knowledge, so that they can make sound decisions for their own health as well as for those that they know. All of this, you know, health and death and dying and life, it's a part of all of us. It's what makes us human, what makes us living things. And so, you know, I always want to impart and share or be the vessel to share any knowledge that I have to hopefully make the difference in the lives of others, but to empower you so that you can advocate for yourself, because that's what's most important, is advocating for yourself. Please be sure to tune in to next Sunday's edition of Healthy 365. We will be discussing the diabetes connection to Alzheimer's disease, which really astounded me. I was watching a clip with a renowned doctor who was, through her research, had discovered that Alzheimer's is now being called diabetes type 3. So I found that astounding, that the diabetes connection to Alzheimer's, I truly did not realize. I mean, I realized the impact of diabetes on the body, but I did not realize that now it's been considered type 3 diabetes. So I would imagine we're going to have an influx or an increase of Alzheimer's just because of the vast amount of people throughout the world, especially in the United States, that suffer from diabetes. So tune into that. It'll be really interesting. We'll be together for an hour and a half for that, because of the nature of diabetes and Alzheimer's itself. Please check out Moving Forward. This is a show hosted by Duane Abernathy, and he hosts the show every Monday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thursday nights, please check out Renita Graves and Ayana Muhammad. They have an hour program at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time called Against All Odds on the same network. And please don't forget to join our Victims Doctors. It is a social network with a purpose. To get there, it is www.victimstoppers.us. There you will find blogs from the other hosts. You'll be with a community of other people. One of the greatest things that it can be utilized for is like a virtual neighborhood watch. So you can actually organize a neighborhood watch there, utilizing like Digital Guard. You can also share information about crime and prevention. You can share your story. You can find out other information or connect with people. There's also Yizor, which is www.yizor.com. And there you can find things like testimonials about different things, recipes, other aspects. And again, it's like social networking with a purpose. Like I said, on the Victim Stoppers, that's where I do like a recap of my show for every week. So you can see previous week's shows. Tonight is show number 6 for my first season. And so you'll see a recap there, and there's blogs there with great help links. That's where I put all of the links, where you can see links to for medical resources. You can see links to things like YouTube channels and stuff like that. So all of that is there. I love to wrap up my show with a positive quote, and you guys know I'm just like pro woman empowerment, okay? I'm like all for it. I'm definitely a beginning activist, so I'm very involved in this whole modern day women's movement. And so I picked one of my sheroes, and I love her to death. Anybody that knows me knows I'm like obsessed with Madonna Ciccone since I was a little girl. Like, she like just rocked my world. I remember her performing Microversion and rolling around on the stage on MTV. So I couldn't just pick one quote from her. I'm sorry, but I love Madonna. So I had to pick like every quote I could find that I really liked of Madonna. So I'm just going to read that, you know, just the essence of what is Madonna. So some of my favorite quotes of hers is, "I'm tough, I'm ambitious, and I know exactly what I want. If that makes me a bitch, okay." And then another one is, "A lot of people are afraid to say what they want. That's why they don't get what they want." And another quote is, "When I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm thirsty, I drink. When I feel like saying something, I say it." And another one is, "I stand for freedom of expression, doing what you believe in, and going after your dreams." And another one, which I just absolutely love, "I am my own experiment. I am my own work of art." I love that. Another one is, "It's better to live 1 year as a tiger than 100 as a sheep." I love that. That's about being a leader and not being a follower, which I'm always telling my kids, especially my daughter. Another one is, "I always thought I should be treated like a star." I really love that. And then my last one, which I just found just really cheeky because I just love her to death, is, "Everyone probably thinks that I'm a raving nymphomaniac, that I have an insatiable sexual appetite, when the truth is I'd rather read a book." And all of those are wonderful quotes by Madonna Ciccone, which is like my epiphany of my girl power. My, like, she's so down to earth and just so real. I love the fact that she is just unapologetic about who she is, and it's okay to be sexual and to be yourself. And no, she's not the best singer, but she's a damn good performer, and you could tell she gives it her all, and she believes in herself, and she really doesn't give a damn what anybody thinks. So I love her. Madonna, I love you, honey. I love you. You are everything to me. I'm going to wrap this up with one of a really great song that I like. I'm absolutely obsessed with Pharrell, and I really am a big fan of Kid Cudi. So this was I think this song was released last year in December. So we'll end with that, and then we'll end with a word from our sponsors. Again, do not forget to support Digital Guard if you are looking for surveillance, monitoring for your home, for your job. If you know someone, like I said, you can start like virtual neighborhood watches, because, you know, not all of us are very neighborly anymore. You know, it really allows us to kind of bring awareness, be proactive about our neighborhoods, be proactive about the crime in our neighborhoods. So please, please don't hesitate to get involved with Digital Guard. There are affordable systems. You can rent some. There's low down payments. You can pay monthly dues. It gives you all this wonderful information. You can wear some of the wonderful t-shirts. There's other things like ladies, I know there's like a taser gun on there. There might even be some pepper spray. So there's all kinds of things to keep you safe. Again, thank you for tuning in. I hope you all have a good night.
on my own way, baby. Suffering on my own way, baby. Suffering on my own way. Tonight is electrical. I've been told y'all this is cinema. I am on my Kubrick horn like a Spielberg. Close to kind of fall. Feeling awesome to be back. And I'm making all competition. Making what I want, that's a fact. Can't do what you want, I ain't that a bitch. Slow up for no one to show gun. Magic, I'm feeling my pumps. Make them go dumb with them hums. On my own way, baby. Surfing on my own way, baby. Surfing on my own way. The industry's so full of shit. Welcome y'all to the enema. Nah, man, no subliminal. Cause they're insecure, they know who they are. Feeling awesome to be back. And I'm working on competition. Everything that I do is a flex. If you don't get me, not my issue, bitch. Slow up for no one to show gun. Got the magic in my palms. Make them go dumb with them hums. On my own way, baby. Surfing on my own way, baby. Surfing on my own way.
Real-time video from any installed camera on our network. Upon viewing an attempted security breach, we can either dispatch a security response unit or immediately contact law enforcement. Digital Guard remote monitoring will improve safety, reduce accidents, reduce shrinkage, increase bottom line, raise staff accountability, and give business owners a sense of peace. Criminals don't care if they are caught on video. They only care if they get caught in the act of a crime. Be proactive, not reactive, when it comes to protecting your business or home. To get started, contact us at 888-640-5777, option 2, or visit www.digitalguardlive.com.